This is Abundance. I am Dan Arid, your host. I want to share the abundance I've found in my life. Those rich blessings disguised both as opportunities and troubles. I hope to help you see the abundance this life offers us, that having a positive attitude and positive expectations can change your life from despair to rejoicing. I love the wealth of excellent poems, short stories, and novels available to us. I celebrate by recording audio versions of famous literature for anyone to use as they want. The combined text and audio version may give you and others a better understanding and appreciation of these wonderful words. I've had opportunities far beyond what could be possibly expected by someone like me, and if I can do it, I know you can find those opportunities you seek. This positive approach has helped me to do the things I've wanted, and the process can help you get everything this life has to offer you. I want to give back and pay in some small way for the abundance I find in my world. We're all on this journey together. And together, with what I can do combined with what you can do, I know there's nothing we cannot accomplish. What kind of abundance do you want? Let's get working on it together. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 101 by William Shakespeare. O truant muse, what shall be thy amends for thy neglect of truth and beauty died? Both truth and beauty on my love depends. So dost thou too, and therein dignified. Make answer, muse. Wilt thou not haply say, truth needs no color, with his color fixed, beauty no pencil, beauty's truth to lay, but best is best, if never intermixed? Because he needs no praise, wilt thou be dumb? Excuse not silence so, for it lies in thee to make him much outlive a gilded tomb, and to be praised of ages yet to be. Then do thy office, muse. I teach thee how to make him seem long hence, as he shows now. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 102 by William Shakespeare. My love is strengthened, though more weak in seeming. I love not less, though less the show appear. That love is merchandised, whose rich esteeming the owner's tongue doth publish everywhere. Our love was new, and then, but in the spring, when I was wont to greet it with my lays, as Philomel in summer's front doth sing and stops her pipe in growth of riper days. Not that the summer is less pleasant now than when her mournful hymns did hush the night, but that wild music burthens every bough, and sweets grown common lose their dear delight. Therefore, like her, I sometime hold my tongue, because I would not dull you with my song. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 103 by William Shakespeare. Alack, what poverty my muse brings forth, that having such a scope to show her pride, the argument I'll bear is of more worth than when it hath my added praise beside. Oh, blame me not, if I no more can write. Look in your glass, and there appears a face that overthrows my blunt invention quite, dulling my lines, and doing me disgrace. Were it not sinful, then, striving to mend, to mar the subject that before was well? For to no other pass my verses tend than of your graces and your gifts to tell, and more, much more, than in my verse can sit, your own glass shows you when you look in it. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 104 by William Shakespeare. To me, fair friend, you never can be old, for as you were when first your eye I eyed, such seems your beauty still. 3 winters cold have from the forest shook 3 summers' pride. 3 beauteous springs to yellow autumn turned in process of the seasons have I seen. 3 April perfumes and 3 hot Junes burned since first I saw you fresh, which yet are green. Ah, yet doth beauty like a dial hand steal from his figure and no pace perceived, so your sweet hue, which methinks still doth stand, hath motion and mine eye may be deceived. For fear of which, hear this, thou age unbred. Ere you were born was beauty's summer dead. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 105 by William Shakespeare. Let not my love be called idolatry, nor my beloved as an idol show. Since all alike my songs and praises be to one, of one, still such and ever so. Kind is my love today, tomorrow kind, still constant in a wondrous excellence. Therefore my verse to constancy confined, one thing expressing, leaves out difference. Fair, kind, and true is all my argument. Fair, kind, and true, varying to other words, and in this change is my invention spent, three themes in one, which wondrous scope affords. Fair, kind, and true, have often lived alone, which three till now never kept seat in one. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 106 by William Shakespeare. When in the chronicle of wasted time I see descriptions of the fairest wights and beauty making beautiful old rhyme in praise of ladies dead and lovely knights, then, in the blazon of sweet beauty's best, of hand, of foot, of lip, of eye, of brow, I see their antique pen would have expressed even such a beauty as you master now. So all their praises are but prophecies of this our time, all you prefiguring. And, for they looked but with divining eyes, they had not skill enough your worth to sing. For we, which now behold these present days, had eyes to wonder, but lack tongues to praise. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 107 by William Shakespeare. Not mine own fears, nor the prophetic soul of the wide world dreaming on things to come, can yet the lease of my true love control, supposed as forfeit, to a confined doom. The mortal moon hath her eclipse endured, and the sad augurs mock their own presage. Incertainties now crown themselves assured, and peace proclaims olives of endless age. Now with the drops of this most balmy time, my love looks fresh, and death to me subscribes, since, spite of him, I'll live in this poor rhyme, while he insults o'er dull and speechless tribes. And thou in this shalt find thy monument, when tyrants' crests and tombs of brass are spent. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 108 by William Shakespeare. What's in the brain that ink may character, which hath not figured to thee, my true spirit? What's new to speak? What new to register that may express my love or thy dear merit? Nothing, sweet boy, but yet, like prayers divine, I must each day say o'er the very same, counting no old thing old, thou mine, I thine, even as when first I hallowed thy fair name. So that eternal love in love's fresh case weighs not the dust and injury of age, nor gives to necessary wrinkles place, but makes antiquity for aye his page, finding the first conceit of love there bred, where time, an outward form, would show it dead. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 109 by William Shakespeare. Oh, never say that I was false of heart, though absence seemed my flame to qualify. As easy might I from myself depart as from my soul, which in thy breast doth lie. That is my home of love. If I have ranged, like him that travels, I return again, just to the time, not with the time exchanged, so that myself bring water for my stain. Never believe, though in my nature reigned all frailties that besiege all kinds of blood, that it could so preposterously be stained, to leave for nothing all thy sum of good, for nothing this wide universe I call, save thou, my rose. In it, thou art my all. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 110 by William Shakespeare. Alas, 'tis true I have gone here and there and made myself a motley to the view, gored mine own thoughts, sold cheap what is most dear, made old offences of affections new. Most true it is that I have looked on truth askance and strangely, but by all above, these blenches gave my heart another youth, and worse essays prove thee my best of love. Now all is done. Have what shall have no end. Mine appetite I nevermore will grind on newer proof, to try an older friend, a god in love, to whom I am confined. Then give me welcome, next my heaven the best, even to thy pure and most, most loving breast. Welcome to Abundance. Today we've been listening to Sonnets by William Shakespeare. Today we're examining Genius, number 501 from my list I call 1001 Thanks. It's a list of 1001 things I'm thankful for in this universe of abundance. You'll hear a lot of different things on abundance, maybe some musings about my week, usually a selection from famous writers or a poem or two. Maybe something to motivate you and me. I'm grateful for the genius evident in this wonderful universe. You never know what's next on Abundance. Literature Out Loud, Overreached, by Edward Sylvester Ellis. Bushrod, or Bush Wyckoff, was only 12 years old when he went to work for Zeph Ashton, who was not only a crusty farmer, but one of the meanest men in the country, and his wife was well fitted to be the life partner of such a parsimonious person. They had no children of their own, and had felt the need for years of a willing, nimble-footed youngster to do the odd chores about the house, such as milking cows, cutting and bringing in wood, running of errands, and the scores of odd little jobs which are easy enough for boys, but sorely try the stiff and rheumatic limbs of a man in the decline of life. Bush was a healthy little fellow, not very strong for his years, but quick of movement, bright-witted, willing, and naturally a general favorite. The misfortunes which suddenly overtook his home roused the keenest sympathy of his neighbors. His father was a merchant in New York who went to and from the metropolis each weekday morning and evening to his pleasant little home in New Jersey. One day, his lifeless body was brought thither, and woe and desolation came to the happy home. He was killed in a railway accident. The blow was a terrible one, and for weeks it seemed as if his stricken widow would follow him across the dark river. But her Christian fortitude and her great love for their only child sustained her in her awful grief, and she was even able to thank her Heavenly Father that her dear boy was spared to her. But how true it is that misfortunes rarely come singly. Her husband had amassed a competency sufficient to provide comfortably for those left behind, but his confidence in his fellow men was woefully betrayed. He was one of the bondsmen of a public official who made a hasty departure to Canada one evening, leaving his business in such a sad shape that his securities were compelled to pay $50,000. Two others were associated with Mr. Wyckoff, and with the aid of their tricky lawyers, they managed matters so that 4/5 of the loss fell upon the estate of the deceased merchant. The result swept it away as utterly as were the dwellings in the Johnston Valley by the great flood. The widow and her boy left their home and moved into a little cottage, with barely enough left to keep the wolf of starvation from the door. It was then that Bush showed the stuff of which he was made. He returned one afternoon and told his mother, in his offhand way, that he had engaged to work through the summer months for Mr. Ashton, who not only agreed to pay him $6 a month, but would allow him to remain at home overnight, provided, of course, that he was there early each morning and stayed late enough each day to attend to all the chores. The tears filled the eyes of the mother as she pressed her little boy to her heart and comprehended his self-sacrificing nature. "You are too young, my dear child, to do this. We have enough left to keep us a while, and I would prefer that you wait until you are older and stronger." "Why, mother, I am old enough and strong enough now to do all that Mr. Ashton wants me to do. He explained everything to me, and it won't be work at all, but just fun." "Well, I hope you will find it so, but if he does not treat you kindly, you must not stay one day." Bush never complained to his mother, but he did find precious little fun and plenty of the hardest kind of work. The miserly farmer bore down heavily on his young shoulders. He and his wife seemed to be continually finding extra labor for the lad. The little fellow was on hand each morning, in stormy as well as in clear weather, at daybreak, ready and willing to perform to the best of his ability whatever he was directed to do. Several times, he became so weak and faint from the severe labor that the frugal breakfast he had eaten at home provided insufficient, and he was compelled to ask for a few mouthfuls of food before the regular dinner hour arrived. Although he always remained late, he was never invited to stay supper, Mr. Ashton's understanding being that the midday meal was the only one to which the lad was entitled. But for his love of his mother, Bush would have given up more than once. His tasks were so severe and continuous that many a time he was hardly able to drag himself homeward. Every bone in his body seemed to ache, and neither his employer nor his wife ever uttered a pleasant or encouraging word. But no word of murmuring fell from his lips. He resolutely held back all complaints and crept away early to his couch, under the plea that it was necessary in order to be up betimes. The mother's heart was distressed beyond expression, but she comforted herself with the fact that his term of service was drawing to a close, and he would soon have all the rest and play he wanted. Bush allowed his wages to stand until the 1st of September, when his 3 months expired. He had counted on the pride and happiness that would be his when he walked into the house and tossed the whole $18 into his mother's lap. How her eyes would sparkle, and how proud he would be. "Let me see," said the skinflint when settling day arrived. "I was to give you $4 a month, weren't I?" "It was six," replied Bush respectfully. "Oh, that warn't my understanding, but we'll let it go at that. I've allers been too generous. My heart's too big for my pocket. Let me see." He uttered the last words thoughtfully as he took his small account book from his pocket and began figuring with the stub of a pencil.
$3 will be $18.
"Yes, sir, that's right."
"Don't interrupt me, young man," sternly remarked the farmer, frowning at him over his spectacles. "The full amount is $18, correct? Let me see. You have at 7 breakfasts here. At 50 cents apiece, that is $3.50. And let me see. You was late 11 times, and I docked you 25 cents for each time. That makes $2.75.
Inasmuch as Bush's wages amounted hardly to 25 cents a day, it must be admitted that this was drawing it rather strong.
"Let me see," continued Mr. Ashton, wetting the pencil stub between his lips and resuming his figuring. "Your board amounts to $3.50. Your loss of time to 2.75, that makes 6 1/4, which Ben took from 18 leaves, 11.75. There you are."
As he spoke, he extended his hand, picked up a small canvas bag from the top of his old-fashioned writing desk, and tossed it to the dumbfounded boy. The latter heard the coins inside jingle as it fell in his lap, and as soon as he could command his voice, he swallowed the lump in his throat and faintly asked,
Is that right, Mr. Ashton?"
"Count it and see for yourself," was the curt response.
This was not exactly what Bush meant, but he mechanically unfastened the cord around the throat of the little bag, tumbled the coins out into his hat, and slowly counted them. They footed up exactly $11.75, proving that Mr. Ashton's figuring was altogether unnecessary and that he had arranged the business beforehand. While Bush was examining the coins, his heart gave a sudden, quick throb. He repressed all signs of excitement he felt, however.
"How'd you find it?" asked the man, who had never removed his eyes from him. "Them coins have been in the house more than 50 years. That is, some of them have, but they're as good as if they'd just been from the mint. As if they's just from the mint, and being all coin, you can never lose anything by the bank busting."
"It is correct," said Bush.
"Are you satisfied?"
"Yes, sir."
"Then sign this receipt, and we're square."
The lad sat down at the desk and attached his name in a neat round hand to the declaration that he had received payment in full for his services from Mr. Zephaniah Ashton up to the 1st of September of the current year.
"This is all mine, Mr. Ashton?"
"Of course. What do you mean by axing that?"
"Nothing. Good day."
"Good day,"
grunted the miser, turning his back as a hint for him to leave, a hint which Bush did not need, for he was in a tumult of excitement.
"That is the queerest thing that ever happened," he said to himself when he reached the public highway and began hurrying along the road in the direction of Newark. "If he had paid me my full wages, I would have told him. But all these are mine, and I shall sell them. Won't Professor Huntraft be delighted?" but not half as much as Mother and I will be. That evening, Mr. Ashton and his wife had just finished their supper when Professor Harndraft, a pleasant, refined-looking gentleman, knocked at their door. "I wish to inquire," said he, after courteously saluting the couple, "whether you have any old coins in the house."
"No," was the surly response of the farmer. "We don't keep 'em."
"But you had quite a collection."
"Oh, I had $11.75 worth, but I paid 'em out this morning."
"To a boy named Bushrod Wyckoff."
"Yeah."
"They were given to him unreservedly, that is, you renounce all claim upon them?"
"What in the blazes are you driving at?" demanded the angry farmer. "I owed him $11.75 for wages, and I paid him precisely that amount, and I have his receipt in full. I'd like to know what business it is of yours, anyway."
Now came the professor's triumph. "Young Wyckoff called at my office this afternoon, and I bought a number of the coins from him."
"What?" exclaimed the amazed farmer. "You didn't pay him nothing extra for that rusty old money, did you? You must be crazy."
"I did, and shall make a handsome thing of it. For instance, among the coins which you gave him was a copper penny with a liberty cap of 1793. I paid Bush $3 for that. I gave him $25 for a half dime coined in 1802. $20 for a quarter of 1827, the same sum for a half dollar fillet head of 1796. And what caps and all, $500 for a silver dollar of 1804. There are only five or six of the latter in existence, and I shall sell this specimen for at least $800. Mr. Ashton, sometimes a mean man overreaches himself, and it looks as though you had made a mistake. I bid you good day. The numismatist spoke the truth, and when the miserly old farmer realized how completely he had turned the tables on himself, it is enough to say that his feelings may be better imagined than described.
Literature Out Loud, Sunrise on the Hills by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
I stood upon the hills when heaven's wide arch was glorious with the sun's returning march, and woods were brightened, and soft gales went forth to kiss the sun-clad vales. The clouds were far beneath me, bathed in light. They gathered midway round the wooded height, and in their fading glory shone, like hosts in battle overthrown. As many a pinnacle with shifting glance through the gray mist thrust up its shattered lance, and rocking on the clift was left the dark pine blasted, bare and cleft. The veil of cloud was lifted, and below glowed the rich valley, and the river's flow was darkened by the forest shade, or glistened in the white cascade, where upward, in the mellow blush of day, the noisy bittern wheeled his spiral way. I heard the distant waters dash, I saw the current whirl and flash, and richly by the blue lake's silver beach, the woods were bending with a silent reach. Then o'er the vale, with gentle swell, the music of the village bell came sweetly to the echo-giving hills, and the wild horn whose voice the woodland fills was ringing to the merry shout that faint and far the glen sent out, where, answering to the sudden shot, thin smoke through thick-leaved branches from the dingle broke. If thou art worn and hard beset with sorrows that thou wouldst forget, if thou wouldst read a lesson that will keep thy heart from fainting and thy soul from sleep, go to the woods and hills. No tears dim the sweet look that nature wears. Literature Out Loud. She Walks in Beauty by George Gordon, Lord Byron. She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes. Thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. One shade the more, one ray the less, had half impaired the nameless grace which waves in every raven tress, or softly lightens o'er her face, where thoughts serenely sweet express how pure, how dear their dwelling place. And on that cheek, and o'er that brow, so soft, so calm, yet eloquent, the smiles that win, the tints that glow, but tell of days in goodness spent, a mind at peace with all below, a heart whose love is innocent.
Jim?
Oh, absolutely, and film honors handed out tonight already as Oscar watch has sort of officially begun. Octavia Spencer won the Best Supporting Actress Golden Globe for her role in The Help. Woody Allen won a Golden Globe for Best Screenplay for the film Midnight in Paris. Michelle Williams won Best Actress in a Comedy Film for her role as Marilyn Monroe in My Week with Marilyn, and much more to come, as right now there's a tribute to Morgan Freeman going on. Backstage at the Golden Globes, Jim Roop, CNN, Beverly Hills.
All right, thanks, Jim. Checking sports for you now. The Green Bay Packers will not be playing in a second straight Super Bowl. The defending champions were knocked out of the playoffs today by the New York Giants. And over in the NFC, the Baltimore Ravens advanced to the next stage of the playoffs, to the conference championship, by beating the Houston Texans today. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Have you heard? Proactive is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive, your acne can heal and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer.